class. He is next Sunday. And as you know, we have two classes. The first is on the Holy Father's Gospel of Life, and the second is on the Catholic understanding of Protestantism. For both of these courses, there was a textbook. The textbook for the first course is the Holy Father's encyclical, either in bound copy or also available in the Inside the Vatican edition by the Dominican Tertiaries in Kentucky. Then the textbook for the second course is Christianity in Conflict by your instructor, which was made available in an off print. And as I think I've told you, you should read ahead. I assigned a certain amount of reading from both the encyclical and the next chapter in Christianity in Conflict. Also, the Catholic Faith magazine has just been published. This is the first copy of the first, I would say, magazine, starting in the last century, called The Catholic Faith. For those of you who may not have received a one-page description and order, I request that all of you, at least as families, subscribe to the magazine. Copies of these will be distributed again last week or last class. There were, remember, copies both of this printout on the magazine, and also for those of you who need a copy, a description of the Association for Teaching the Catholic Faith with a half page order blank for membership. Our plan, therefore, for this afternoon is first to continue where we left off in our question and answer catechism on the Holy Father's encyclical. Each of the questions has a more or less condensed answer, followed by a section number corresponding to the encyclical. And I believe we got up to question 19 in our last class. You should have by now up to and including question 41. Am I correct? And let's pick up with question and answer 19. Remember, this encyclical of the Holy Father, Evangelium Vitae, is meant to meet the deepest crisis in the history, not just of Christianity, but of the world. Never, as the Pope says, in the history of mankind has there been more widespread genocide. Number 19, therefore, the question reads, does God punish the crimes of homicide? He does. At the dawn of the human race, Cain was cursed by God. He was banished to live in the wilderness and the desert. The divine justice is not changed. Murder and violence profoundly affect the whole of human society. I believe it is more than casually important to emphasize the fact that the divine attribute of justice, God's justice, is never disobeyed without consequences. And let's be clear, as our faith teaches us, the consequence of every sin is always twofold. One effect is what we call guilt. Guilt, theologically speaking, has nothing to do with an emotional state of mind. The essence of guilt, as the Catholic Church understands it, the essence of guilt is a loss of grace. Consequently, if every sin has consequences, murder surely does. The first consequence, therefore, is the loss of grace. And our faith teaches us every deliberate homicide is a mortal sin and deprives the person who takes the human life of another person, deprives the murderer of his or her supernatural life. Abortion, therefore, is always, always a mortal sin. However, there's a second effect to every sin, and that is what we call penalty. And again, in English, as I've said, the worst language in the world to try to teach theology in is English. Penalty is the debt of suffering which is due to everyone who commits sin. Sin and pain go together as cause and effect. All pain, all suffering is always due to sin. Not necessarily, as we also believe, the sin of the one who suffers. There's such a thing as others suffering from my sin and my suffering for their sin. The divine justice, therefore, has not changed. And when we say justice, let's be sure we are clear. The divine justice applies both to our good actions and to our sinful actions. God is just in rewarding our good actions always and in the same way. Just as God's justice removes grace from the sinner in the measure of the sin committed, and God's justice always sends suffering and pain as a consequence of sin, so conversely, for the practice of virtue, God always rewards in strict justice every good action we perform with doing what? With giving us grace. Every time we perform a good action, we increase the grace in our souls. That's the divine justice. And correspondingly, every good action we perform deserves from God and always rewards with happiness. The happiest people on earth, hear it, are the holiest people. the most unhappy are the most sinful. And by now the world has invented an ocean of ways of substituting or trying to substitute for the absence of happiness in sinners. So far, 19:20. Is the anger of God mitigated by his mercy? It is. As we see already what happened again to Cain after he killed his brother Abel. Cain was punished. Only God knows who the descendants of Cain have been over the centuries. God pledged himself to protect the personal dignity of Cain. And the words of St. Ambrose, quote, God who preferred the correction rather than the death of a sinner did not desire that a homicide be punished by the exaction of another act of homicide. In other words, God did not, shall we say, murder Cain. With God would not have been murder, because he is God. God did not kill Cain for killing his brother Abel. Cain was punished indeed, but he did not pay for his murder of Abel by losing his own life. And each one of these questions, building of course on what the Holy Father is teaching us, has a litany of implications. Consequently, just as God, though exercising his justice, he is always also practicing mercy. And what is mercy? Mercy is a love shown to a sinner. And we on our part, we being also offended, as we may say, sinned against by others, we are therefore to exercise mercy towards others, following the example of God, and later on Christ himself. And here is, God allows people to injure us, to do us an injustice, to sin against us, to offend us, in order that, this is our faith, in order that we might practice mercy towards them. In other words, by not paying back, as in strict justice, someone who has offended us deserves. Someone tries to destroy our reputation. We are not then to avenge ourselves by trying to destroy that person's reputation. 21. How important is the Lord's question to Cain, what have you done? Of course, in the book of Genesis, God knew exactly what Cain had done. He wanted Cain to own up. And, says the Pope, this question is being addressed to the people of today. The Lord wants to make them, in other words, us, realize the depth and gravity of the attacks on human life, which are so widespread in contemporary history. And the word realize is chosen deliberately. It is one thing to know something. It is something else to realize it. To realize something is to make it real in my mind. As I think we've said before, all of us after our birth date could place an AD. Whatever year we were born, AD. As far as God is concerned, it could have been BC. Instead of being born, say, in 1950 AD, we could have been born in 1950 BC. Why not? But God, and let's be clear, God wanted us, He wanted us to be born in and live in the most criminally homicide century of all human history. And we are here to get some idea of why God wants us to learn from the horrors of the crimes being committed against innocent human life in our day, to learn something about human life we've never known before. His sanctity, His sacredness, how precious it is, and our task in life, having the true faith, is to teach others as they take over from the homily, which I'm afraid many of you did not hear. Am I correct? Well, I thought it was a pretty good homily, but we who have the true faith, it's up to us, and I mean this literally, it is up to us to learn the lesson that God wants to teach us by the widespread murder, and the lowest United Nations figure is 65 million abortions every year. The lowest figure. As Mother Teresa tells us, once you legalize murder, murder of innocent unborn children, what else can you still call a crime? What's crime? It's just another word. Either we learn the lesson and teach the rest of the world, or the lesson will have been lost. And that is why I read, because I get so much fundamentalist Protestant literature, and even many Catholics, as you know, are expecting the end of the world to be soon. I don't believe it will come soon, but I think I may say this. It will not come soon, provided we will have the faith learn the hard lesson that God wants to teach us. And hear it. God will not have to enter the world by, say, volcanic eruptions and earthquakes throughout the continents of the globe. We are destroying our own human race. Am I clear? If death first came into the world through sin, we may believe that the final destruction of the human race could be by human beings destroying one another. We have an awful lot to learn. The Lord wants us to realize the depth and gravity of these attacks on human life. And so, next question. What are some forms of this violence to human life? Then a long answer. The most obvious forms of violence are murder, war, slaughter, and genocide. But this violence is also being done to millions of human beings, especially children, says the Holy Father, who are forced into poverty, malnutrition, and hunger because of an unjust distribution of resources between people and between social classes. As I think I've said in class at least once before, my month's stay in Calcutta a year ago remained indelibly on my mind. You walk the sidewalks of Calcutta towards evening, through the night, and the early morning. Human beings, the lowest estimate is 16 million people living in Calcutta, and millions with no roof over their head. In the morning, police come along, they're not sure. All these bodies, which bodies are still alive, which are dead, and which are dying. But in more than 30 years of teaching comparative religion, I can tell you, it is all perfectly logical. The what we call pagan religion of the native Indians has no respect for human life. It's part of their religion. And there's one word that keeps recurring in the writings of our present Holy Father is the word person, person, person. We are Christians. We believe that each person is an individual, intelligent being, distinct from all other persons for all eternity. That is not the faith of almost a billion people in India. There's no such thing as individual persons in Hinduism. Over that matter, in Buddhism, it is our Christian faith that provides us with the foundations for not just respecting human life, but loving human life so dearly, we should be willing, remember, even to lay down our lives to save the human life of another person. Abortion would never have been legalized. I say this and I know I'm being taped. Abortion would never have been legalized in our country if the Catholics of America had lived their faith faithfully. I mean it. And part of their faith, 5 years between 1968 and 1973, the Vicar of Christ issued Humanae Vitae in 1968, condemning contraception. Was it last year that somebody before class upstairs gave me a copy of the, I will not identify the diocese, Catholic paper, in which the bishop of that diocese openly defended contraception? Remember what we did? Let's bless ourselves and pray for the conversion of the bishop. So we blessed ourselves, sealed Hail Mary for his conversion. Anyone who does not believe that contraception inevitably leads to abortion is living in a dream world. We can hear you. Says the Holy Father, this violence is also practiced by the scandalous arms trade, which spawns the deadly armed conflicts which make our century the most bloody in human history. And among the countries that make billions on arms production is the United States. What I'm sharing with you might just as well be the rear side of these pages. As far as most, I'm afraid, Catholics in our country realizing what's going on. No wonder our nation is not doing what it could have done for years in, say, stopping the widespread murders in unjust wars being fought. Now, as we know, in Southern Europe and for generations in Africa, you know, why not? There is mazuma, money, in making the weapons for people to kill each other. Once more, last sentence. This violence is seen in the criminal spread of drugs, in the promotion of sexual activity, which results in grave risks to life. Oh, how much we all have to learn, beginning with the speaker. 23. How can we explain the rise of such hostility to human life? Answer. There are many different factors that can be identified, but among these are especially skepticism about the very foundations of human knowledge and morality, acute poverty, anxiety, and frustration. Let's take each for a moment in turn. How come is widespread hostility to human life? First, skepticism about the very foundations of human knowledge and morality. We believe that morality depends on the truth. That's not just our faith, that is sanity. That is why the Holy Father made sure he first issued Splendor of the Truth and then came out with the Gospel of Life. What is the truth? The truth is that the moment a child is conceived in his mother's womb, he is not an embryo. It is a human being. And when one of my Jesuit fellow professors, 4 years we were together on the same faculty, I opened the New York Times one morning and I blink. Front page. This priest is defending experimentation with embryos and allegedly to produce, well, some medication that will relieve other people of physical pain. Front page. Thought of myself, that's a sure way of making the New York Times front page. All you've got to do is deny your faith. Very simple. I will never, thank God, make the front page of the New York Times. And it was in New York City, as I've said more than once, where the abortion mania began. And I have to say this, I must say this, it was because of the strong backing of the Jewish people whose Torah, that's the law, defends abortion on the grounds that a human being is not a human being until, what shall we call it, that unborn flesh is still in the womb. Not a human being. Over the years, I've brought as many as I could of the Jewish people to the Catholic faith. I say to myself, if only we Catholics had something of the zeal, the courage, the aggressiveness of the chosen people of Israel in our day. Question 24. What is the net effect of these factors on human society? Or that's 24. The effect has been to produce what we call a veritable culture of death. And that phrase, by the way, of the Holy Fathers has now penetrated all kinds of literature. Culture of death. What makes the situation so grave is that, quotes, this culture is actively fostered by powerful cultural, economic, and political currents which encourage an idea of society excessively concerned with efficiency. Such preoccupation with the pleasures of this world has actually produced a war of the powerful against the weak. All I can tell you from the depths of my heart, every sentence of the Holy Father is not just worth memorizing, but meditating. That's what's going on in our country. A war of the powerful against the weak. Once people come to identify the purpose of human existence as limited to this world of space and time, anyone who stands in the way is to be eliminated. The elimination, we may say, has become a worldwide, according to the Holy Father, conspiracy against life. As I'm sure I've said before, medical books have been changed. Those for taking care of people, see, under the age of 60, and those over. And those who are over 60 to be phased out. And of course, those who are weak may be weak because they don't have the financial resources or don't have the education. And how this dear Lord, how this needs to be re-examined. Who alone is able to get a higher education today? Either the one who can afford it, has the money, or whom somehow the government subsidizes. And then what happens? How many vocations over the years of my priesthood I have potentially dealt with men who will never be ordained priests. Why not? By the time they finish college, they have debts. $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 debts. And in one diocese after another, Kata-Mazuma, you can go to the seminary. If you don't have the money, out you go. But so we're looking for vocations. Say that again. You're lacking vocations. Say that again. I hope I'm clear. Am I still clear? This conspiracy set against life is deeper than most of us realize, and has deeply penetrated. How sadly well I know also Catholic circles. What is the most devastating form of this conspiracy against life? It is, says the Holy Father, the spread of abortion. Enormous sums of money are being invested to produce pharmaceutical products to ensure the killing of unborn children in their mother's wombs. So too is this, that scientific research seems to be exclusively preoccupied. Look, I'm quoting from the Vicar of Christ. Seems to be. We know there are other purposes, but the preoccupation with developing weapons of death against innocent children awaiting birth. We may not have occasion to say this in another context, but the psychiatric profession is working hand in glove with drug manufacturers. Psychiatrists working with drug manufacturers prescribe drugs. And America's figures are, I'm quoting, 70 million Americans are taking some kind of prescribed drug to give them some semblance of, what shall we call it, peace of mind. No wonder America. Hear it. I'm quoting from scientific research. It is the most sterile nation in the world. Is artificial reproduction contrary to the moral law? Note the change in the Holy Father's focus. Artificial reproduction, contrary to the moral law. And of course, once you have artificial birth control, you will also have artificial? Well, birth increase. I cannot tell you how deeply grateful I was to God when doing my doctoral studies and in Detroit in biochemistry. And by that time already, learning about all the scientific research that was being done for the control both of human life and using science contrary to the moral laws. And I was taken by superiors out of my biochemical studies and put into theology. My last term paper in, well, in my graduate studies was on the effects of being able to open the atom with wonderful and disastrous results. The electronics are the result of opening the atom. But electronics is also at the root of so many deadly weapons these days. Weapons taken internally. The cheapest weapon now is a dagger or a gun. Question. Is then the reproduction of human life artificially against the moral law? Yes. Both the natural and the revealed law of God. Now, why? Why is artificial reproduction sinful? It is basically sinful because it separates procreation from the fully human context of the conjugal act. As I both read and then synthesized the Holy Father's statement in the present context, I thought to myself, how many people, and I repeat, many professed Catholics, have only a dim idea of how precious in the eyes of God is marriage, and how sacred is the marital act. In the last analysis, every sin against chastity is a sin against the sacredness of marriage. With millions, as we know, not even bothering to get married, moreover, besides, in other words, in artificial reproduction, no matter what else is done, no matter how clever science may be, no matter how effective, hope I'll be clear. We all know enough science to realize that modern science, as we keep repeating the word, modern science has been phenomenally, incredibly effective in producing, what shall we call them, marvels in the world of our day. I left for Portland, Oregon on Friday evening. I got to Portland before midnight. Got a night's sleep. spoke in Portland, answered questions, had mass, and returned to Detroit last night, 11:17 p.m. We can travel thousands of miles and, except for changing your clock, we even know the distance you covered. The average lifespan of every American has been increased by 30 years since 1900. By 30 years. Do you hear me?